This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the Zona Plus, a new effective non-drug treatment for high blood pressure. It's been a long time since I've been this excited about a new natural medical innovation. Zona Plus is the real deal. It's a safe, easy way to lower your blood pressure naturally. To find out more, go to tryzona.com or call toll-free 1-888-408-6141. That's 1-888-408-6141 or tryzona.com. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Once again, it is time for our weekly Q&A with Layla. How are you doing, Layla?
Okay, Dr. Hoffman, how are you?
Very well.
It's warmer out. I'm excited. The sun is different. It's higher up.
Yeah, you know it's risky when you say that when we record a podcast, because it may be a few days before we post it, and people
will be saying,
what the heck are they talking about? Because all of a sudden it's a cold snap and it's 11 degrees.
That's true.
It's still conceivable because, you know.
We're not live, folks.
Right, right. Yes. The end is not in sight when it comes to the cold weather. And, you know, we've had snow in April. So, anyway.
Yeah.
Those of you who are listening to us in Latin America, or listening to us in Southern California or Arizona, Florida, you may be puzzled as to what we're talking about. So let's ignore that. This has been a busy couple of weeks. We've had some great interviews. I did a really interesting interview that appeared, I think, last week. Mm-hmm. For many of you. We posted on Facebook, and you may receive it in your feed. It was on methylation, and methylation, big topic in nutritional medicine these days, because it gives us an understanding of why many diseases happen, from autism to Alzheimer's to many conditions, cardiovascular disease. It also has a little bit to do with the homocysteine connection, but not always. It's a very complex and confusing area, and we had
depression.
A great podcast, depression, mood, and then we had a great conversation with Dr. Kara Fitzgerald, who's very scholarly on the subject, has done a lot of research, and she's concluded that all this genetic analysis that we sometimes do sometimes may just lead us to reflexively prescribe high-dose B vitamins in an effort to fix some kind of genetic glitch. It's more complicated than that. Mm-hmm. And with our genetic testing, we're not quite there with, you know, we haven't just gotten to the formula for this.
Yes.
And we have what we call, what I've dubbed the SNP whisperers, people who will take your DNA analysis and they'll look at it 6 ways to Sunday and they'll tell you need this or that or the other supplement. And mm-hmm. That is overly simplistic.
Yeah, because, as we were discussing earlier, you could have that particular, the way the genes are switched on and off is also due to nurture, our environment, how we feed ourselves, all of that. But we're finding out that's applying to the SNPs as well, the expression of MTHFR.
In other words, if you have, like, say, a double hit on MTHFR, 2677s, or as I saw a patient today, 21298s, you're not necessarily doomed.
Yeah.
And, you know, and also her emphasis is on methylation lifestyle, which is interesting. It's an insight to me because I used to think, oh, methylation was just a matter of giving high-dose B vitamins, B12, methylcobalamin, methylfolate,
right.
B6, and, you know, you fix it all up. Mm-hmm. She's talking about how diet, lifestyle, sleep, stress, exercise all have an impact on our methylation, and also toxins, environmental toxins, mercury and lead and, you know, the chemicals in our air and food that we eat and the air that we breathe.
And in our bathroom cabinets, our personal grooming products, any preservatives, additives in our foods where you're, you know, all of that.
Yeah, they all affect methylation.
Mm-hmm.
So, listen to that podcast for more details. I thought it was really brilliant and incisive. And, one of the fun aspects of my job is I get to talk to some of the really top people doing really laser-like focused research on one or another area of nutritional medicine. It's good stuff.
Yeah.
So let's, as we usually do, let's proceed with questions. You can send questions to radioprogram@AOL.com, and we'll get your questions. It may take a couple of weeks because we are a little behind in our pipeline answering questions because we do tend to digress, don't we?
Yeah.
But I hope you enjoy our digressions.
As we do.
As we do.
As we do.
Right.
Okay. So we've got an email from Gregory. Hi, I'm an active or try to be active adult, low 50s. Arthritis has taken over my knees and hips. I was diagnosed and have a prescription for Humira, which I have not filled. Mm-hmm. Sounds like rheumatoid arthritis if he was prescribed that.
Right. Wouldn't be prescribed for osteoarthritis.
Right. I take curcumin, glucosamine, and I try to eat pineapple and avocado when I can. I guess pineapple for the bromelain and avocado for the plant sterols.
Right.
Like in Modicare.
It's seemingly not working for him.
Yeah.
And so this would be, you know, like a consult. This would be, you know, a patient coming into us saying, and as often happens, I'm the tell me it ain't so doc. Patients are told, you need this kind of surgery, you need to be on a statin, you need to be on a powerful immunosuppressive drug for rheumatoid arthritis.
Dr. Hoffman, tell me it ain't so.
Tell me it ain't so. And sometimes I tell people that unfortunately they, you know, because I'm not one of these integrative doctors who says that all medicines are crap. You know, there's sometimes where you actually need to put out the fire if you have a severe inflammatory or autoimmune disorder.
Yeah.
So I don't know the particulars of this case, but, you know, we would examine diet. We'd recommend a paleo diet for autoimmunity.
Yes.
I recently interviewed a couple of gals who, young women who are written a book called The Autoimmune Handbook. Is the Autoimmune Lifestyle Handbook? Yeah, because I think they're talking about not just what supplements to take. They're actually okay on supplements, but they're mostly about lifestyle. Again, lifestyle, we tend to look for the magic pill, whether it's a medicine or whether it's a supplement. Yes, curcumin. Yes, boswellin. Yes, undenatured collagen type 2.
Yes.
A product called RumaShield. You know, these are the things that get lots of fish oil, of course, high-dose vitamin D. Even rheumatologists are testing patients for vitamin D and prescribing it these days. So low-dose naltrexone could play a role in autoimmunity.
We might suggest that. And that's a prescription.
That's a prescription. You have to see a doctor for that.
Absolutely.
So what is, in spite of this person's best efforts to take certain supplements, why are they so rampantly progressing towards joint pain and immobility? I don't know. I mean, frankly, in some cases of rheumatoid arthritis, it's so relentless that we have to use medications.
That's true.
And the diet may reduce the need for as much medication or sometimes supplant the need for medication.
Yeah, which is a wonderful day.
Yeah.
And, you know, particularly in rheumatoid arthritis, besides following a paleo-type diet, you also want to make sure that you eliminate the nightshades. This is particularly true in rheumatoid arthritis, I find, in all of the autoimmune conditions that it's most strikingly beneficial. So the avoidance of tomatoes, white potatoes, peppers of all types, except the black pepper shaker on your table, eggplant. Tobacco is a nightshade, folks. So if you're around secondhand smoke or anything like that, that's something.
Right.
And I can't believe people still smoke in this day and age, but here we are.
People do a lot of worse things.
People do a lot of worse things, it's true. That's true. So, Gregory, what you need is a consult. We need to completely assess what your lifestyle is like, what your diet is like, any other medications you're taking or use, even over the counters that we have to take a look at. And it's really a full workup.
Comprehensive.
More than anything.
Workup, and also the importance of the gut, the microbiome in this, addressing leaky gut. Sealing the gut, repairing the gut.
Which is the prerequisite of so many autoimmune conditions, is leaky gut.
So we have an example of this, actually. We have several examples of this. One is, you know, I'll name her as Maria. I think you know who we're talking about because we saw the, you know, the son-in-law, the son and the daughter-in-law just recently.
Yes.
Maria is someone who did try all these medications, but she's very smart. And she realized she was getting these very scary side effects from medications. So she decided to not take anything. And embark on a natural program with us. And her rheumatoid arthritis is well controlled. Unfortunately, she's had it for many years, so there was some damage that is irreversible. So she has some, you know, gnarly
some
joints,
deformity.
But the disease is in remission with her strict adherence to diet and taking many supplements. We also saw a young man who was getting progressively achier, and I think you know who I'm talking about.
Yes.
And we just saw him. It's quite interesting because his, you know, I asked him, how are you doing? He goes, fine. And I go, well, isn't there anything? He says, well, I guess I'm a little stiff. But this is a guy who was complaining of major stiffness. We finally, the doctors did a test, and they didn't suspect this in a relatively young guy. I think he's 26.
Yes, he's in his 20s.
Rheumatoid factor was elevated. It was 120. Well, it came down to 60. We have a test pending. We hope that it's come down further. But from a symptom standpoint,
yeah,
he's much better. He's adhering to the diet. He's taking the supplements. It's all good.
It's all good. He's really embraced it. And, you know, that's a quality of most of our patients is when they come here, they're ready to embrace something like that, a major change in lifestyle, in diet, in...
We won't take them otherwise, frankly.
Yeah. Exactly, yeah. Because otherwise you're not going to be helped, you know?
Also, you know, we are a team so that, you know, I'll talk to patients about diet and then I'll say, go see Layla down the hall. And, you know, some patients will say, well, no, I don't want to do that. And I go, no, you have to. I don't want to do that. Well, I don't buy into that diet part. Well, then you're wasting your time here. Yeah.
For you doctors who are listening, please heed this. I think it should be mandatory.
Right.
Yeah, to have a nutrition consult. So it's...
Yeah, I mean, look, there's now group practices are the thing.
Yeah.
And so let's say you got a group of rheumatologists. Get a nutritionist, you know. At least part-time, you know, one day a week where all your patients can come and see the nutritionist, get them a proper diet, you know, even if it's not as rigorous as ours. Maybe have them take a couple of supplements, you know, how to properly take fish oil and vitamin D. The doctor doesn't have time to talk about that.
Right, right.
So, you know, or certainly a cardiology group practice. I mean, see the rationale for that. How about
diabetes.
A neurology group practice where, you know, a lot of MS patients are coming in, or Parkinson's patients. How about, you know, or patients with dementia. How about that? You know, get a nutritionist into the office because, you know, even though if you're not believing that nutrition has a primacy and you are dishing medications and doing procedures, nutrition is an important adjunct to whatever specialty.
Yes. Yep.
Yep.
Absolutely.
End of sermon. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Gregory, best of luck. You need a consult. All right. We've got, this could be the topic of a whole podcast, Dr. Hoffman. John writes, dear Dr. Hoffman and Layla, what are some natural ways to combat erectile dysfunction with food, supplements, and lifestyle?
Okay. So, we
don't smoke.
No, right. Yeah, there's some things not to do, but we just both co-authored a chapter in a book which is coming out, which is Natural Therapies,
Natural Therapies for Sexual
Dysfunction
health?
Or Sexual Health or something?
For Sexual Health.
Yeah, Natural Therapies for Sexual Health. So it's going to be this big tome with contributors in various fields talking about the natural adjuncts to sexual health and performance. Now, our chapter is on nutrition, and I'm not going to say, you know, eat,
oysters,
you know, and you're going to get really horny or something. Or, you know, some of the suggestions are eat things that are shaped in a certain way, like an asparagus. That was asparagus is kind of sexy vegetable. There's actually more of a science to it, and we boiled it down, I think, in a very nice chapter. This is going to be available to health professionals. I think the book is going to be expensive. It's not a popular book. It's more of a text, like for health professionals. But
I think it will be out this July.
Yeah. Okay. Good.
Summer. Maybe?
Cross your fingers.
Yeah.
Chapters are written by different types of health professionals. So there are acupuncturists, there are chiropractors. Chiropractors believe that the energy flow of the body has something to do with sexual performance. There's chapters on herbs.
Yeah.
We didn't write the chapter on herbs. I think the chapter on herbs was by Dr. Gio Espinosa, who is
urologist.
A naturopathic urologist. And so, that's his forte. Personally, I don't believe so much in the efficacy of herbs for sexual performance.
Unless they're the precursors to Viagra or something like that.
There is
that.
No such thing, really. Right, I mean, Viagra's, right. You know, I do prescribe Viagra because I think it's, you know, especially for men who lose confidence, it's a confidence builder if it works. It's not, I mean, it can have side effects. If you have side effects, just don't use it. But, you know, when it comes to diet and lifestyle, the basic thing is, like, get really healthy. Exercise.
Exercise, get rid of any belly fat. If you're hauling around excess weight, you need to get rid of it. Alcohol will certainly cause erectile dysfunction. Be careful of that if you're a regular beer drinker or anything like that. That has to go.
It will loosen your inhibitions, but then when it comes time to perform, your performance may lag.
Right.
So the other thing is there is a dimension of on diet, which is to eat the nitric oxide, the nitrate-rich foods, which may promote nitric oxide, which is the mechanism by which erection occurs.
Lots of vegetables, beets, celery, spinach, cabbage, cucumber, all of those, just all the vegetables, all the produce.
And also, you know, avoid insulin resistance, which interferes with testosterone. If you're obese, your testosterone is generally going to be lower.
Right.
Plus, it's less sexy.
Yes.
You know, unless you're into that, you know.
Exactly.
It's, you know, it. I mean, it even physically is an impediment to, to sexual activity. You know, I think there may be a chapter on certain body work like massage or yoga. I mean, yoga, I think, is also very good because I think yoga tends to open up the channels, create some more flexibility in the body.
Yeah.
And that may promote sexual energy. Many of the foremost yoga instructors in the world were sexual predators, it turns out.
Really?
On a maybe not so humorous note, but you know, they molested or abused their disciples, and maybe that was the power relationship, but they were sexy. So not that we want that.
Right. And John, if you're a regular user of marijuana, that's another reason, because that will blunt your testosterone.
Okay.
If John, if you're a vegan and you're a frequent consumer of soy, that may be a lot of estrogen you're introducing into your body, which is quashing your testosterone,
too. You know, one approach we took in that chapter is we actually took the opposite approach, which is, what do you do dietarily if you want to reduce your sexual desire? And you might say, well, who in the heck would want to do that? Oh, well, actually, that was a goal in the 19th century. There was, people felt that these tempestuous desires were afflicting them, and it was an era of repression. It was the Victorian era.
That's right.
And in fact, they recommended that you stay away from spicy food and meat, and you eat very
bland. They might
bland,
invoke passion.
Right. You would eat very bland, starchy food.
Yeah.
So maybe there is something to it, is that if you eat like a vegan, starchy diet, and actually I think it's been shown that there may be a reduction in the production of testosterone, because cholesterol is actually a building block in the body for production of the sex hormones.
Right.
So if you go on a no-fat diet, very low saturated fat and cholesterol, perhaps you will attenuate your libido.
Yeah.
Which is, I mean, if you're a, you know, have a vow of celibacy or something, maybe that's what you want to do.
Right.
But.
And John, if, speaking of which, if you're on a statin, if you're on a cholesterol lowering medication, that might be a source of erectile dysfunction. John.
And many drugs.
Yeah,
many drugs. Many, worse than statins. I mean, many of the blood pressure medications, psychiatric drugs.
Oh, yeah.
Even Propecia, you know, what, you know, there's recently controversy, you know, because look, they're always trying to come up with something that Donald Trump is doing wrong. And now his idiot doctor indiscreetly shared that he's taking Propecia for his hair. It's, you know, you're supposed to safeguard a patient's medical confidentiality.
That's
so that orange mane that he has is artificial because it's being perpetuated by Propecia, which, by the way, has a sexual side effect in some patients, which may cause short-term or longer-term erectile dysfunction because it's a testosterone blocker.
Right. And John, if you have coronary artery disease, it's not just the coronary arteries that are getting blocked.
Yeah.
There's a network of arteries in the pelvic region.
You know, they sometimes say, and this is kind of a little bit of a meme, is that your erection is a dipstick for your cardiovascular status. And if you're, I mean, look, there are many reasons to not have adequate sexual performance. It could be psychological. It could be, neurological.
Yes.
But it also could be circulatory. And one of the first things to go in diabetics who have poor circulation is, proper sexual functioning. So that may be a heralding of a need for complete cardiovascular evaluation.
There you go. Oh, another class of drugs. This reminds me, I'm just recalling an episode of Sex and the City where one of the characters is with a man who doesn't require sex. And the reason for that is he's on an antidepressant.
Oh, yeah, right.
Don't feel like it.
Well, that's
not the need for it.
Particularly in women.
Orgasm isn't important.
Right,
I don't know.
Well, it's actually more of an issue in women. But one of the things that these, we're majorly digressing, but I think it's an interesting discussion.
Yeah.
One of the things that the antidepressants can cause in men is retarded ejaculation. Okay, which actually is helpful as a therapy for one type of sexual dysfunction, which is premature ejaculation.
Yes, yeah.
This is a not uncommon sexual dysfunction, often affecting younger men, which may be, somewhat anxiety-related, but because of the property of antidepressants to retard ejaculation, it can actually prolong sexual intercourse, that it can be helpful in that setting. Mm-hmm. But, when you blunt the emotions of fear, anxiety, and mood, you may blunt the passion as well. You just get
the
kind
joy,
of feel flat.
Yeah.
You feel flat.
Yeah.
Women, many women would prefer their depression to the complete lack of sexual enjoyment they have when they're on antidepressants because it's just...
Bravo.
They feel deadened, completely deadened.
Yeah. To feel nothing is worse than to feel...
Right.
Even if
a
you don't feel great.
A major problem with the drugs that we have.
Yeah.
Okay, so anyway.
So, John, lots of food for thought here.
Pretty good dissertation on that subject. And, and if you have $327.95, you can get that book when it comes out. I think we'll probably... That's going to be a bestseller. I think we're going to sell at least 500 of those. Maybe to medical libraries across the country.
Right. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Well...
It's a special book. I mean, maybe we should do a popular version of that book. That might be hot.
It's not a bad idea.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, John, thank you for your question. Best of luck to you as well. But you also need a consult to explore why that is occurring for you. Okay. We have an email from Alex. Oh, this is interesting. Hi, and thank you very much for your very informative program. I'm 61, pretty healthy, and came down with neuralgia paresthetica. Are there any natural ways to treat this malady? And what this is, Dr. Hoffman, I'm reading here, lateral femoral cutaneous neuropathy.
Mm-hmm.
And that the term neuralgia paresthetica combines four Greek roots to mean thigh pain with anomalous perception.
Right. So it's not like peripheral neuropathy where there might be a cause like B12 or there might be a cause like, some kind of toxicity or, the result of taking chemotherapy or sometimes concussion, too much vibration in a, occupation where maybe you're using a pneumatic drill, to blast a concrete, and you get peripheral neuropathy in your hands. The answer is I don't know if there's a nutritional therapy. I'll be quite honest.
Yeah.
If it were peripheral neuropathy, I'd say, okay, B12, maybe B12 shots, alpha-lipoic acid, acetyl-L-carnitine. These things might help. But in this case, I don't know. But it's worth exploring acupuncture. It's worth exploring some kind of nerve stimulation, electrical nerve stimulation.
Mm-hmm.
They have some very sophisticated units now in pain clinics that can sometimes stimulate the nerves to blunt the discomfort. It's a way it works. It's kind of interesting. It's kind of like, noise-canceling headphones.
Yes.
You get in a plane, and there's like a roar of the engines, and then you put on your noise-canceling headphones. You can listen to music. It cancels out the noise.
Right.
If you have, and that's all based on acoustic frequencies.
Mm-hmm.
With electrical frequencies, you can do the same thing with pain, because pain is an electric impulse. And they are beginning to have a better understanding of the electric impulses qualities that can be canceled out by a counter current. So you can sort of mask pain. And I think that this is a fabulous area in the future for pain sufferers, is that they'll either give people units that they can apply externally, or they'll be implantable units, which will deliver the precise, it maybe through some kind of algorithm or artificial intelligence, it will learn the nature of the pain and then apply the right formula of intensity and frequency to interfere with the perception of pain.
Fascinating.
Yeah, but that's in its infancy, but there are companies that are moving ahead with that.
Wow.
It's much more sophisticated than TENS. TENS is like you set it and forget it. Mm-hmm. This one is going to be more more adaptable to specific conditions.
Wow.
Anyway, we're running short on time for part one.
Yeah.
Give us a preview of what we're going to talk about in part two.
After eating a meal with potato and egg, I experienced severe vertigo. What happened?
Whoa.
These
You're not
the questions
supposed to
we
break
get.
The egg on your head when it's a hard-boiled egg.
Right.
Stop hitting your head with the hard-boiled egg.
Yes.
No, there's something else going on. Let's discuss it in part two. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, today with Hoffman Center nutritionist Layla Mutin, and this is our weekly Q&A with Layla and part of Intelligent Medicine.